Whether you're an educator exploring innovative teaching methods or a parent seeking to enrich your child's development, we invite you to join us in discovering the transformative power of play with our next guest, Ant Morrell. Ant Morrell is a co-founder of Bounce and has not only created an incredible play experience for children, but has also turned it into a global success. With his innovative approach to urban sport and entertainment, Bounce has expanded rapidly, opening multiple locations worldwide. Children from various corners of the globe now have the opportunity to experience the thrill and joy of bouncing in a safe and dynamic environment. Ant Morrell's dedication and providing exceptional play experiences has resonated with families worldwide, including my own, making Bounce a beloved brand known for its exciting and inclusive atmosphere. Through his leadership, Bounce has become a global phenomenon, captivating the hearts and children of families everywhere with its commitment to fun and active play. And I know this firsthand of frequent visitor to our Bounce here at Burleigh on the Gold Coast, the default for my children on the rainy days, and a good opportunity for my ambitions to get mixed up with my capabilities within bouncing around and flipping around as well. So thanks for what you're doing for play, and thank you for allowing my family to play also. Thanks for joining us, Ant.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for coming to Burleigh. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
So many people think about play. We instantly think of a park. We instantly think of school playgrounds. But we're moving into this era of these commercial enterprises actually taking play to the people and making it accessible once again. For a generation that played outdoors like you or myself, All of a sudden the children aren't playing, they're not getting activated, and all of a sudden you've got this beautiful commercial enterprise that can actually take play to the people. So I thought it'd be a great opportunity to pick your brain on the trends, the challenges, and your vision for play ongoing. So let's start with the first question that I ask all people. What was your most memorable play experience?
I'm like you, I think, nostalgic about my childhood of playing outdoors, you know, up and down trees, playing in the roof, playing in the brickworks down the road, you know, climbing over the cyclone fence to get in there. I do have a couple of standout memories that I go back to. One is these fantastic friends of mine, two brothers who lived not far from my house, where I, of course, rode on my bike, on my BMX, and they were just very innovative, and their house was sort of usually full of kind of pretty creative play adventures. Favorite being rigging up the flying fox from the parents' bedroom at the top of the stairs that went across the garden via kind of gnarly tree and then into the pool. But the one I probably, hark back to was with my cousins at my grandparents' place in the sleep out. I think it was 11 or 12 of us sleeping in a series of beds and bunks and obstacles like dresses and exercise bikes. And just there was this game we had, which was not dissimilar from running around in the Bounce X Park, actually, but just jumping from bed to bed and cupboard to cupboard in a sort of a complex series of rules, off ground tiggy, sort of sleep out style. It was great.
Nice. And I can see there's easy lines to draw between the Bounce Parks and that experience for sure. Our listeners from all over the globe, so I'll hand it over to you. So people go, what's this Bounce they're talking about, for the people that don't know?
Yeah, okay. Well, should I tell you a little bit about the genesis of how it started? Because how it started is a little bit
absolutely
what it is. Bounce is now 10 years old. We describe it in a range of different ways. You know, it's an adrenaline playground for free spirits. It's an active entertainment center for any age and any skill level. If you haven't been to Bounce, just picture a, 3,000 square meter giant warehouse with 10 to 15 meter ceilings full of trampolines that are next to each other and other play features and obstacles. And a bit like my game in the sleep out with my cousins and brothers and sisters I just described, it's really designed to remove the constraints of gravity and unleash the human athlete that, for a while has been laying a little dormant. And its genesis really is kind of try and give everyone, you, me, our children, access to the not only the kind of nostalgic play experiences we were just describing, but a taste of where sport, self-powered physical activity has got to in the last, you know, few years. You know, previously, we would say before we opened our venues, the freestyle playground of flight suits and kiteboarding and parkour and free running. And some of those sports you saw at the recent Olympics, surfing, skate, snowboarding, you know, freestyle sports, aerial sports, were really the domain of a very small number of people. And there's been some fascinating convergence over the last few years, and we wanted to make those experiences available to everybody and anybody. So that's what the venues are designed to do.
And what was the spark? What was that moment?
Yeah, so I think the first spark, you know, is often, you know, if you trace it all the way back, a random phone call from someone saying, I've just seen this thing in America, you should go and have a look at it. And the first version of the concept of trampolines next to each other, and instead of jumping up and down like we did, jumping from this one to the next one and to the next one and maybe doing a few tricks in between, we saw that at a place in America about 11, 12 years ago. That was the spark. Yeah. And visiting that was a little bit underwhelming, actually. You know, we'd kind of gone via the airport looking at the GoPro hype reel, looking what some of our, you know, members of the human race were getting up to. Wow, that's what's going to be possible at this place. Imagine this incredible place. And when we got to it, it was more just for 10 and 11-year-old birthday parties, but we thought, you know, if we do this well, if we use padding, trampolines, airbags, features, obstacles, we could make something incredible for everyone. But that was the spark. And I think the other really powerful spark or series of them was, you know, a lot of the freestyle stuff I talked about before was emerging in entertainment content through either Red Bull ads or GoPro ads or things flying around the internet. But it was content that people were consuming and watching and getting inspired by looking at it. But there wasn't a way of the general public to be able to do any of it. And at the same time, there was some, you know, pretty significant issues emerging in the community about childhood obesity, physical inactivity amongst all ages. And so you had these negatives of inactivity and these positives of combining physical activity with euphoria and fun. So essentially, you know, here's a space to allow kids to start having so much fun they don't even realize they're exercising. So that was pretty inspiring to us as a spark as well.
And what's been your biggest surprise, like your unanticipated impact, if you will, since opening?
I think maybe the scale of the opportunity and its layers. And, you know, there's inherent positives in the business idea and the model. You know, imagine a place where anyone of any age and skill level could come and get a taste of the extreme sport world in a safe and supervised environment with inspiring young staff and great music playing. So that, as an idea, you would think just that holds some water. I think what's been unbelievable to watch is how much that has just exploded and deepened. You know, we started the business really as it was general admission. You come in and you find your way around and you have fun. And over the years, it's developed into coaching programs, a really deep and multifaceted kids parties offer, school programs, corporate programs. And most, maybe not surprising if we thought about it, but we didn't think about it, is that proposition of unleashing the spirit and physical sort of capability of the human body has translated so powerfully from suburban Melbourne to Saudi Arabia to, you know, India, South Africa, Burley Heads, Melbourne.
Yeah.
You know, its universal appeal has been pretty surprising.
Yeah, and I think the underlying tone there is it comes back to fun. All these things are fun in a world, and especially coming out pandemic and being from having places in Victoria and being in Victoria, you know that firsthand. But then having this avenue to just have fun, and for the play people out there or maybe first time listeners, a lot of people on their analysis of play say if it's about the outcome, it's not play. So we try to recreate these experiences like within organized sport, activities for children, school. It's like, oh, let's make fun, school fun and play. But you just doing all these organized events where it's actually taking away from the experience. And just through my observation, you see with it being more open-ended opportunity within in the play parks, really that chance to connect into just enjoying the process.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I see that in the parents as well. They're like, kind of look at it and they're like, well, what are you meant to do?
That's a great, it's a great point. I mean, we've got a little bit of a complex relationship with fun. And, you know, to make the business work, frankly, we've got to really understand that. I mean, we are kind of codified to have fun on Friday afternoon when we've finished our work. And on Saturday, as parents, we have fun on Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday, we start to get a bit serious. You know, if somebody asks you how you are, you know, my age and life stage, it's usually, you know, how are you? Are you busy? And your answer should be, yes, I'm busy. Don't worry about me. I'm busy. It's rarely, you know, are you having fun? And as you say, even the sport physical activity stuff is usually in some way caught up in our desire to improve, to upskill, to compete, to win.
Yeah.
And so I think just having something, you know, that removes perhaps the hard edge of competition and you're doing it together. You know, for us, it's a, you know, we would think of ourselves as a community hub where you come in and, you know, you're in, you're entering the present moment. I mean, it's an interesting, they're conflicting ideas in a way. If you, you know, you walk into the bookshop and half of the shelf is covered in how to, you know, find the present moment and be in the power of now, and, you know, even being mindful is now landing safely in the mainstream sort of consideration set of good ideas, which is all pretty good news for, you know, having fun and making your own play. And some of the things we talked about, you know, what did we do when we played when we were younger? You know, this is self-powered stuff and it's driving creativity and it's proactive. It's on the other side of boredom even, and isn't something that is, you know, technologically or screen-based stimulus.
Yes, and we'll get into that screen-based competition, if you will. The benefit of it that I see is if an environment's too easy, like you alluded to there, your arc of interest will drop and it will be boring. And but then if an environment's too challenging, it ends up in a place of overwhelm.
Yeah.
But with it being open-ended and encouraging people to do what they feel and reflect on, you're responsible for you, it allows that bounce between a stretch competency and boredom.
Yeah,
and
they absolutely can
traverse that. And that's how so many times when I go there, it's like a click of the fingers and, okay, it's 2 hours have just gone.
I think that's built into lots of things, isn't it? Even if you're trying to strengthen a muscle, I guess you're trying to push it beyond its comfort zone and then it will, you know, double its efforts and improve and grow. It's really interesting, the idea of progression. I mean, I think it's very much, you know, from a purely business point of view, I think if people aren't subconsciously progressing at either a skill or they want to try a trick or they got a bit higher this time, or, you know, we've got something wall running where you bounce on a trampoline and run up the wall, or you move through the X park, or you beat your friend in the head-to-head race. I think if that element of addictive progression wasn't in there, maybe our frequency wouldn't be as consistent as it is. But, you know, we certainly, from a business point of view, it wouldn't work for us because of the cost of the venues to be like a bungee jumping experience where I went to bounce, I loved it, 10 out of 10, and now I'm going to go back to cricket or tennis or playing the violin or reading a book. Definitely. We definitely observe that it has that progression element, but it is, it's sort of subconscious, I think. It's through the lens of joy and euphoria and flow state, you know. I'm really interested, obviously, in the flow state. And, you know, if you can get kids of any age kind of losing themselves in the moment and finding themselves in the moment, maybe, that's really powerful. Set aside from the business side of things.
Yeah. And also that's the engaging in an environment that can produce those level of joy and euphoria. A classic quote I love is like, the bigger the feelings, the deeper the learning.
Yeah, great.
So when you have that, and then also with that fear setting that prompts you, when there is that edge of fear, that world is blocked out and our vision actually tunnels in and we're absorbed in it. So as busy and as loud as an environment can be, when we've set that goal for ourselves, not someone else telling us what to do or play the game, it's ultimate reward. The biggest hit of dopamine a child or adult's going to get is when they set that goal for themselves and then achieve it.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And I don't think
a lot of that happens from not distracted from the worries of tomorrow or the worries of today or how I look or how I'm dressed. But, you know, that really precious and difficult to arrive in state where, you know, my mind and my body and my soul are all deployed in just what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. And it's a good opportunity to mention, and it's not within the absence of fear. And it's not within the absence of challenge that these need to take place. It's because the fear and challenge that prompts the flow and something that, like, there's a bit of a repercussion here. So this demands my full attention. Yeah. When I give something my full attention, I'm going to get the full reward.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Even if it's a perception of fear that drives focus or exactly gets the heart rate going and you're overcoming something. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Critical.
Yeah. Even you just mentioned the wall running. I'm like, oh, yeah. I've tried it and I'm unco at it. And it's one of those things that's like, next time.
We will get one of the great hosts from Burley Heads to get you up to the top of the large wall by the end of this year.
Talking about staff and your hosts and essentially having a playful environment. But we've got to equally acknowledge that you're responsible for a lot of people. There's certain requirements and processes you need to go through to be able to liberate your customers to have fun around safety. How do you support that playful spirit within your staff and that playful culture? Because a lot of our listeners come from early childhood centres and they know it's a play-based curriculum. They know they're involved in play, but then they're caught in those responsibilities.
Yeah. So thanks for asking that, because I love talking about it. It's probably, we're customer-centric. We're trying to deliver a certain set of experiences and emotions to our customer, but the business achieves that and is really most significantly focused on the staff side of things. So if you haven't been to Bounce before, the concept is a role model host. Doesn't matter what venue you walk into anywhere in the world, every customer, every visit, every time, you should, in theory, and mostly in practice, I think, be just greeted by an incredible young human being who's typically between 18 and 22. And, you know, we will historically, back in the day, maybe less numbers now, but we will speak to 800 people to pick 80 staff. And typically that's that sort of number of young people as hosts in the venues. And they're, you know, predisposed. We're not looking for their CV for whether they've liaised with key stakeholders for the last 5 years and where they see themselves in 10 years. You know, we're looking for someone who has an incredibly centered sense of confidence that's come from self-esteem rather than an overactive ego. And there's a way of, you know, finding that. And then we're looking for a way to unlock and empower that young person to be friendly, encouraging and inspiring towards a customer of any age and skill level. So they should be able to read body language. They should be able to use eye contact really powerfully. They know how to get down on a level with a young kid. They know how to hashtag intervene, which is a very important strategy if somebody's looking a little bit overzealous and needs to be toned down. But the role of the host is essentially to deliver the sort of experience you're describing, which is to treat every customer visit as here's someone walking into a potentially intimidating environment, and our job through our supervision is to, you know, bring a sense of human connection to that person, make them feel comfortable psychologically in the environment, comfortable physically in the environment. We do a whole range of things to make sure it's safe and supervised, but then to unlock whatever play dream that person might have or maybe hasn't even had yet, such that it's a truly magic experience. So a visit to Bounce, you can think of someone as a visitor and they become a customer after that experience with a staff member. And once they feel, oh, I feel part of this place, I feel I belong here, I want to come back.
Yeah, absolutely. Working with educators and the sector always encourage people, the environment gets them in the door, but it's the relationship that gets them to
absolutely. Stay. Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that.
That is exciting. And I can see that firsthand. The interactions with the team has always been fantastic. I've got my son that likes to scale up quite quickly. So it's always a good, and I think the word that sums it up is they always have grace around that redirection as well, I find. And it's always impressive to see that certainty for such young people. Yeah. For the younger generation, that's they're just on screens, then get bad rap.
That's a very big point, by the way. I think you're right. Yeah. That sort of projection and stereotyping onto that age group, I find can, if you're in an interview process or by default, you almost have to lead with the fact that you don't believe in that myth. Because what we've found, I mean, we've got thousands of staff now at the school leaver age all around the planet. And, you know, if given the opportunity and the responsibility and the respect to be a role model and to be the face of a brand and to carry forward it faithfully, its beliefs, and know how to, you know, that it's one thing to be cool, but it's not cool to be too cool for school. And inclusivity is the most magnificent version of that sort of energy. And so, you know, I guess what we're presiding over each hour in each venue is a giant intergenerational party. And, you know, these young people need to be able to make it look safe and okay to get on the dance floor at 11 o'clock in the morning. And so they're going to carry themselves a certain way. And if you trust someone of that age with that responsibility, they take it very seriously and they shine brilliantly.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, enough to, you know, interact with plenty of young adults in our community. And I'm just impressed most of the time. I was like, I didn't have a clue what I was doing at your age. And you seem to there's absolutely amazing people out there. So keep it up. I like what you said, the multi-generational. It's great to see when you go into Bounce, like parents having a go, but also being confident to step back as well and just let their children go. Do you have initiatives around parents, getting parents playful and moving beyond the risk, which will then lead me to the next question around that risk mitigation piece as well? So firstly, how do you get parents playing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. Again, placing value on play firstly, and I think also pushing through the invisible barriers to why you wouldn't get involved. I mean, I think different customers, different age stages. I think with the junior jumpers, the little freestylers of tomorrow, the preschoolers in the mini bounce zone, a lot of times it's positive and enriching and optimal to create some space between the parents to let the kids go off and turn the ball pit into a jungle or whatever it is that their imagination is bringing up for them. But the other parents, I think, I mean, it's a bit unique in that regard. We've got trampolines and obstacles and challenge features. So for pretty much any young active adult, it's going to be a little bit tempting anyway. And, you know, we don't ever push anyone beyond what they want to do, but there's plenty of subtle ways of encouraging people on board. I think I shared a story with you offline. Maybe it's not the time for it, but, you know, I've been so delighted by a couple of parent stories that have come out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely the time to share them. Go for it. I love these stories too.
The first one was pretty early on. We just launched the first venue. It had gone, you know, bananas. It was clearly right for its time. People were pulling their kids out of school to come to Bounce. We had to tell the PR agency to kind of go on holiday for a few months because we couldn't deal with the customer phone calls, let alone the media phone calls. It was a really exciting time. Anyway, I bumped into this friend of mine, a girl called Tracy, who I hadn't seen for years, and she sort of ran up to me and really wanted to have this conversation. And she was explaining how she'd taken her really high-octane sort of 8-year-old twins down to bounce, and they'd been having a ball and they'd been going for about half an hour, and then her high-octane husband, Felix, became equally excited, was out there amongst it and jumping around and trying to run up the wall, and then he came and dragged her in, and she originally was a bit reluctant, and then in she went, and the family booked another hour and another hour after that. So they were there for 3 hours. And obviously I was delighted and inspired by that, and that just felt fantastic, and I thought that was the story, but she was like, that is just the beginning. Mm. You know, and then last week when I was at school doing the pickup, and I was standing there with the school bags and holding the shopping and waiting for the kids to get off the monkey bars. They were playing chase tag, and I just looked at the monkey bars through an entirely fresh lens, and I hadn't been doing that sort of thing since I was a teenager myself. And off she went, you know, early 40s, through the kids, leapt on the monkey bars and just flowed through and out the other side. And it was a big moment. And so those sort of things are really inspiring. And then I think I told you I met a bunch of mums who had started trapeze classes. They've been doing it for 5 years. And their trapeze class, they'd all got together because they were mums sitting around watching their kids doing the Bounce Freestyle Academy. And they got to talking, and one suggested maybe do something. And now they've been doing trapeze for 5 years. So it is definitely awakening the urban athlete.
Yeah. Oh, and the playfulness. And a conversation I was having with Dr. Peter King from the UK last night was, you know, joy could be described as playfulness dressed up.
Brilliant.
You know, it's just the base of joy, isn't it? And that's what it comes down to. I love it.
And joy, things like joy, I mean, if there isn't, if everything we're doing, whether it's what we're working on, why we go to work, what we're nurturing and growing and educating our kids around, if all of it eventually isn't in service of somehow maximizing the moments of joy, of course there's in between joy, there is downtime where we do our big learnings, as you mentioned at the start. But if not joy and play, then what's the objective? And somehow that can get lost.
Yeah, absolutely. And I work with my psych quite a bit, and he was like, is this a doing thing or is this a being thing? And when we are playing, it's just prompting us to be. And when we put playfulness and joy, so many of us, as we do that checklist, once I get this week out of the way, and then. And what I hear in those stories is that joy being bumped up the list, because all of a sudden it's not this abstract idea. It's actually a tangible representation of it. And you can go, oh, I can actually see it, feel it, touch it, taste it. So all of a sudden joy is real and not something I have to aspire to.
It's so nice to see, you know, a lightning bolt of joy through a random experience being the catalyst to create something that reawakens something or starts something. I mean, that idea of, you know, taking my kids off to a skills development coaching class and somehow making a bunch of new friends and becoming a trapeze artist in middle age, you know, that's brilliant. Yeah. I think, I mean, if we talk, you know, deep for a second about the purpose of our business anyway, you know, far beyond just this idea of, you know, skill sets and moments of joy and euphoria. I mean, these are now, you know, there's millions of people coming through each of these venues each year. They're big community hubs. They employ a lot of young people. But we've now seen the power of the brand and the venues and the role model hosts to, you really create a ripple effect into the local community. We say that the purpose is to inspire movement, self-expression, and human connection. And, you know, that's sort of unleashing your free spirit physically, emotionally, and spiritually in a way.
Yeah.
And that's where it gets really exciting. You know, what's on the other side of mass market play? You know, what does it look like when you're a movement for movement and everybody's running out of the venue smiling and coming home? And, you know, it's very powerful. I mean, I don't want to overstate it, obviously, but it is powerful, and it starts with, oh, wow, I'm looking at my children sweating. I haven't seen that for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're like, oh, I didn't know they could do that. The amount of times I've heard that is like, oh, I thought he was going to do this, but look at him.
Yeah.
Or look at her in that same instance. And I just think you just in those values describe what it is to support a thriving community and create it, that belonging. I think coming out of COVID and lockdown and people going, what do I actually – and there are – is it a revolution or evolution? Who knows? But the four-day work week and people wanting that bit more of a balance as well, it all talks into it. It's like people being exposed to play and joy and movement and being like, oh, hang on. I actually like this. And there's more to this lineal action of chasing something than might as well bounce in that
direction. Obviously,
I
never want to sort of try and summarize that COVID experience, because for so many people it was so different and horrible beyond measure. But for many as well, there was back to this idea of permission to kind of just question for a moment, maybe I should fly the kite this afternoon with the kids, or maybe I should prioritize participating in that fun that I'd almost put in their box. And I come along and do that too. And that tiny window where there was permission, I mean, it became a big talking point, and everybody was, if when this is finished, I'm going to make sure I don't lose this habit and that habit, and a bit of a refresh for a lot of people. And it was for me as well.
Yep. And how many locations
do
you have now?
We just opened our 18th a couple of weeks ago. This is in Australia, in Moray Field. And drum rolling, we're opening our 19th Australian venue in Sydney next week. Our first Sydney venue, would you believe, having gone around the world. It took us a long time to find a site worthy of the Sydney entrance and a ceiling as high as we need in Sydney. So that's next week.
Yeah. And within proximity to the people without being by an airport or something like that. Well done. Well done. Going back, we mentioned it earlier, that risk. And risk within play, and there's classic argument that all play includes risk. But I think it's the perception of risk that varies. You opening a bounce park, trampolines are classic. Everyone has a flashback of being pinched on a spring or being bounced off by a sibling and breaking a bone. What hurdles did you have to overcome, or the naysayers around, you can't do that because it's
absolutely
too
risky? It obviously isn't reading a book on the couch, and that is definitely a really important pastime. But our belief, and certainly the belief of those that we sought early on to help us, is exactly as you say, that risk, some risk, risk managed risk, and the perception of risk to allow you to go boldly and courageously and get on the other side of that. So, in terms of the things we navigated, the typical backyard trampoline things obviously needed to all be neutralized. You can't be seeing a spring. And so everything's built in padding, circus-grade padding, no exposed springs, lots of pretty standard rules, one person per trampoline, supervision, all that sort of stuff. But ultimately, it is active, self-powered, muscle-generating, adrenaline-fueled physical activity. So, there's the logical things around, we co-created the Australian standard with the relevant authorities, and there's the ATPA, the Australian Trampoline Parks Association, all those things you have to do to even sort of set foot in this sort of space. And, you just can't have schools, parents, community groups, kids advocating for a place unless you jump all of those hurdles. So all those things we just had to work through, and there's ways of doing that. It's a lot of work, but, you get to the other side of it. But then I think as we sort of started to see ourselves and understand ourselves as an active entertainment, self-powered, physical, adrenaline playground, with these adventure challenge courses, the perceived risk that you might fall, it looks like a long way down. Now, in reality, there's a safety net there, or there's a harness around you. But the critical thing is, is to have the mindset that I need to put my feet in exactly the right spot here, or otherwise there's this consequence. Now, the consequence isn't there, but the perception of the consequence is important to overcome the barrier. You know, on the other side of navigating the fear is the personal growth, which we touched on earlier.
100%, it's that the risk-benefit assessment that you're constantly doing. And Alan Sandstetter says, without exposure to risk, children will fail to develop the barometer of what the risk and hazard.
Absolutely. I mean, if you pull all the cactuses out of the kinder, you know, we learn that the cactus is sharp by touching the cactus. Now we're okay. But, you know, some of these things, I think, you know, it felt for a period that there was a bit of overcorrecting on managing risk in the community. And
Yeah, absolutely. We have as you would know, with the Australian standards and things like that, it has progressed and improved. Worthy in our 10th year as well. I was getting asked in the early days, can I put a log in a playground?
Yeah.
And now they're building whole areas out of logs. And even the latest update in with the American market is within their standards, they're saying it needs to be a risk-benefit assessment, just not risk mitigation.
Yeah.
So quite exciting.
Yeah.
Well, exciting
times. We need to be,
I feel,
you know, as people, we need to come out the end of these various experiences and be able to navigate the risks that are going to present themselves in the traffic and in the city and in the forest and anywhere else we may go where it hasn't had the railing or the padding put around it yet. So we need to be able to pilot ourselves safely in the wide world.
Yeah. And as a playground designer and consultant, I'm constantly considering, okay, how is this learning represented in the physical? Because it's all good to tell a child to be careful. And we hear it all the time, but the child's like, what? Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? And if we see them as capable and competent, they can make those informed decisions themselves. And you see it at Bounce all the time. It's this scalable level of what you called, I think, the self-generated movement.
Self-powered,
And it's scalable and that self-powered, which is
it's almost
phenomenal.
It's probably, I mean, what are people doing at Bounce? It's really balance, coordination and agility, but through the lens of fun. So I'm having a really fun time. I'm 8, I'm 9, I'm 10, I'm 14 or whatever I'm doing. But the balance, coordination and agility movements going to be transferable into almost any form of coordination. I think the other really critical thing is, particularly with the mini bounces, you know, these little junior jumpers, is it's setting up a positive relationship with physical activity for life really early. You know, if I move my body in this way and I do this and I get from here to there, it's really fun. And that's setting some early habits and some early mindsets, some early relationships with what, you know, you could be forgiven for missing as a young person living in a, you know, super dense environment with, you know, lots of this in the house.
Yeah. Yep. And that's what I feel at the heart of Bounce, is that inclusive spirit for, yes, the physical competence as well as the sensory awareness and, you know, creating from the junior jumpers experience all the way through. And I know it's something that you value a lot. And there's a fantastic video about inclusion on the website. I'll put a link to it. I think it's so, so positive. Can you talk a bit about those steps towards inclusion for Bounce? And we spoke about offline, you really putting your flag in the ground, so to speak, around opening a Bounce in Saudi.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess it comes from a belief. You know, it's not something we're trying to maneuver because we think it's somehow benefit for, you know, any other reason than it's actually inherently a better experience. Is I personally believe the best party is the one that has the grandchildren and the grandparents and everybody in between and some dogs running around. And, you know, the diversity is rich and enriching. And that goes for inside these venues. You know, there's a couple of hundred people at any given time inside, and it's just frankly more enjoyable. The atmosphere is richer when you've got all skill levels, all ages, you know, different people for different areas. That includes the, whether it's the special needs group arriving with a bunch of carers, whether it's high sensory need kids, you know, whether it's, you know, babies. If you can walk, you can bounce. I mean, you've got to be a little bit beyond the dummy, but you know, that's the boundary, really. And I think the point you're talking about with the Saudi example was, you know, fascinating for us because, you know, we're pretty excited to be opening a venue in that part of the world. You know, when we were first taking bounce internationally, it was all under the banner of the free jumping revolution. You know, the bounce free jumping revolution is coming. Join the revolution. Are you part of the revolution? Be a free jumping revolutionary, et cetera, et cetera. So we'd seen the power of the experience to drive positive outcomes into the community. I'm pretty excited to take it to the Middle East and in particular Saudi. But, you know, without overstating what you can achieve, you know, we were told pretty quickly that it would be a male-only venue, and that's what the mall wanted and that's what was going to happen. And so, you know, we said we weren't interested in that, so we wouldn't do it. But we could maybe do it if we built a female venue of the same size scale next to it. And that's what we ended up doing. And just the fact that we did that created so much, you know, positive energy around others who were advocating for similar sorts of things to, you know, step in behind that and see that as a bit of a beacon. And it was really inspiring to be a part of.
Well, congrats on that milestone and impact as well. It's it all adds up. And as I say to so many, well, anyone that will listen, to be fair, that, you know, if we've impacted one child, we've done a good job. I think there's this, like, that understanding for those junior leaders about understanding that play, cues, returns, and that physiology. Yeah. It doesn't discriminate. It's all children. And lastly, before we wrap up today, what's your favourite part of being that co-leader at Bounce? How do you stay playful? And I'd love to understand the vision for Bounce forward
I'll
as well.
Jump around on that one if you don't mind. I mean, I love running the wall. You said it right at the start.
Absolutely.
So that is something I personally love to do in the venue. I'm interested in a bunch of, you know, sports from the freestyle world. I like to surf, I like to ski, and I find it really good for my, you know, just spatial awareness, and it's just good for every part of that to keep that those parts of my life alive. It's really helpful. One of my favorite things to do is to run the wall at Bounce. I use it as a much valued training tool for the other things I like to do, like surfing and skiing. I think the thing that it probably feels best about being involved is walking into the venue and just, you know, you can close your eyes and feel the atmosphere. You can feel the joy. You can feel inclusion. You can feel all the things that we've talked about. And that's almost any venue anywhere in the world. And obviously, you've got quiet days, but if you go into a venue on the weekend or you go into a venue on school holidays, it is humming with positivity, inherent positivity. And the other thing is, I think we're really lucky in a way that what we're doing is really positive. You know, it's not, we don't have to kind of fudge it and try and shoehorn a purpose into somewhere to feel good about something we're doing. It is inherently positive, and it has, you know, a significant impact. And that comes through in the love letters we receive, through all of the customer experience kind of systems and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, so the positive impact, not only for the customers, but for the staff. And, you know, it's a humming factory of positivity. And it just feels, you know, amazing that in your one and only life, you know, as you're experiencing as well, the thing you're working away at is doing something that is inherently positive at a time where, you know, it's a tricky time to be a human being.
Yeah, absolutely. What's your dreams for Bounce?
Well, our stated vision and objective at the moment is to double the size of the venue. So we're a year into that at the moment. So in about 18 months, 24 months, we'll have doubled the size to 30 venues. And what we say as part of that is to be the most loved and dominant brand in our category in Australia. That in itself is really inspiring. My dream is for that to keep keep the intent pure and to have the impact, you know, sustainably over time. It's far exceeded, I think, what any of us thought we would be able to achieve. And kind of to, you know, to follow it on that journey, I think it's very inspiring, for example, that, you know, that there are people jumping around in, you know, Mumbai and Dubai. So where else could it go internationally? I just to keep it going and keep growing it, I think.
I'm just going to circle back because I think it's something really cool to talk about. Offline, you spoke about, you know, this increase in interest and accessibility to the more extreme sports, if you will. That there's a trend, a lot of people moving towards that. And it's actually hugely in contrast to like organized sport and avenues for organized sport. And the what popped up in a personal conversation with some friends last night was how more children are interested in becoming influencers than they are sports stars.
Maybe they can be influential sports stars. It's a bit to do with that convergence thing I talked about as the catalyst for the business. But one of the fascinating inputs to our strategy and our growth story is this 30-year CSIRO, you know, what are the top six, I think it's six, mega trends in sport for the next 30 years. And all of them are really flow neatly into the direction that we're going. And the one that grabs us the most potentially is from extreme to mainstream. So, you know, if you look even 10 years ago, no one really knew what parkour or free running were. It looks like those sports will now be in the next Olympics. Yep. We talked already about what was in the previous Olympics, you know, these aerial sports, individual sports, self-expression sports. It's really self-expression. And the convergence between, you know, music, fashion, sport and lifestyle kind of converging. And you know, it's cool, and it's maybe got some things that are more accessible than, you know, the team sports or the highly competitive sports. It's not so much about winning and losing. It's about self-expression, and it just seems that that's quite current. And I guess for us, it's been hugely, we've been a test case for it. You know, what would it look like if you made these sort of experiences available to everyone pretty much on the planet? You know, would they come, and would they keep coming back? And so, you know, that idea of extreme to mainstream, I think we're the proof of that. You know, that it was, if I think the example we gave was, you know, if you said the council are putting in a skate park, 15 years ago, the residents would be up in arms and placarding, and now, you know, the school bus are coming along to get skate lessons and things like that. It's all becoming more accessible and more popular.
And Australia specifically have the biggest ratio of skate parks per capita in the world.
Isn't that amazing? I did not know that.
I was at the International Players Association and talking to some designers that work for those big companies, and they're like, you guys in skate parks?
I had no idea.
Like, what are you talking about? And they shared that.
When I think about it, there's one down the road, and there's one down the road from my old house.
It's a default. That's really exciting, and that gives me so much more to think about. I'd love to revisit this on another podcast and then get into that design consideration and how you go about and what's the process. So many of our listeners
I'd love to talk about that
design field as well. Well, Ant, thank you so much for not only joining us today, but contributing to my family and our playful spirit. Give us an option on those rainy days specifically. They're really, really good. And, you know, the birthday parties, the playful spirit, and just sharing your wisdom and passion with our listeners today.
Thank you.
So thanks so much.